As a lot of you know, I have a health challenge, and I can usually get through Sunday without doing anything, but I'm afraid I have to put myself on a leash this morning, which means I won't be able to walk around. I have enough experience with this at home that I realize I'm kind of like a dog I used to have. Every time you chain it up on the yard and put it on a leash, it would, in 5 minutes, tie itself up around posts and things. Well, so I'm going to have to kind of stay behind the pulpit. So I don't fall down. But if I don't turn this on, I'm running kind of low on gas, as it were. And while some of you do seem to lose consciousness during my talks, I think it would be better if I didn't. When we read about the miracles in the Bible, the things Jesus did, the things we see in the Old Testament, it seems like the power to do these things just comes out of the blue, comes from out of nowhere. But you know what? In truth, God's miracles, God's answers to our prayer, don't come from out of the blue. They don't come from out of nowhere. Actually, they come from out of everywhere. Because as Paul said, we live, move, and have our being in God. Now, I've quoted that many times. We've all read that. But you ever think about what that really means? What that means is that this universe, the world around us, and everything in it, including you and me, we all have our existence in God. God isn't someplace separate from the world in which we live. The world in which we live is a part of God. Creation exists within the Creator. So, there's no blue sky here. Just a real presence. We can never be apart from God because, in a true sense, we are all, each and every one of us, a part of God. And this is the truth, the understanding that will eventually set us free. That we live in a constant state of unity with our God. And that God, whether we know it or not, lives in a constant state of unity with us. That's what the winged globe symbolizes. The state of unity that exists between our world and God. But we don't think of God that way. We have a sense of separation. And that's what we're really trying to overcome in this life. Our sense of separation is a delusion. Well, just like the blueness of the sky. We say the sky is blue. When you look outside, when you look up into the sky on a clear day like today, it looks blue. But why isn't the sky, the atmosphere, blue in here? I don't see any, I see some blue painted on the walls, but I don't see any blue around me. I know there's atmosphere here. There's air to breathe in and out. I've got a little more than the rest of you. There's air that sustains you, but you can't see it. Trust me, I know something about this. You'd know it if it wasn't here. When the atmosphere isn't coming in and going out, oh, you know it just like that. Why does the sky appear blue? Well, I can give you a complicated answer, but it has to do with the fact that the light that emanates from the sun, which itself seems just clear and bright. We call it white light, but it's not white like my shirt. You stand out in the sunlight and it just seems invisible too. But within that visible light, there is concealed all of the colors of the rainbow, literally. And our atmosphere acts as a kind of a prism. And when you look at the sky at a certain angle, it appears to be blue. But that's just the way the waves of light that come rushing to Earth from the sun, like the waves wash up on the beach at the ocean. Those light waves, when they strike the atmosphere around our planet, the air we breathe, it makes it appear to be blue at a certain angle. And at another angle, at sunset, you're looking at the same phenomenon, only at that angle, when the sun appears to be low in our sky, actually the sun doesn't move at all, then it brings out the red wavelengths of light. But the atmosphere itself, invisible, invisibly present. The sunlight itself has all those colors, but they are invisibly present. And even the ocean, whose waves are kind of like those light waves, if you scoop up a glass of that ocean water, or if you watch it wash over your feet at the beach, it seems relatively clear too, except for all the fishies and things. We are surrounded by and supported by all sorts of things that are invisibly present. And that is what God's presence is like. Now, with sunlight, we can transform all of those invisible properties into visibility. They can become manifest, like the sky does, like a prism does. Our goal is to create a mental atmosphere that allows us to do the same thing with the invisible presence of God. An atmosphere that will take all of the color and all the power and all the resources of God, which are all around us all the time, and make them visible in our lives. Make them concrete and real. That is our goal. If God seems distant, it's for the same reason the sky appears blue. It's an optical illusion. It's a faulty way of seeing things. God only seems separate from us when we are at a distance from God in consciousness. Once you get up close, well, God seems nearer than breathing and closer than hands and feet. Now, the Bible talks about this idea. Theologians call omnipresence in a lot of places. And one of the most beautiful expressions of this idea that the Bible is trying to teach us is found in a psalm that is not often read. And I think it's not often read because, well, it doesn't read like a psalm. Unlike most of the other psalms, which are poems that were originally lyrics, actually, to actually be sung, the Book of Psalms is the hymnal of the ancient Jews. This one reads more like a prayer. And not a public sort of prayer at all. It reads like a private prayer, like one soul's communion with God. The psalm I'm referring to is the 139th. How many have read it this week? Am I the only one? Well, maybe you'll read it next week. When you do, I'm going to make a suggestion to you before I begin. And this may be one reason why it's not as often read. There's a problem with this psalm. There are four disputed verses in it. I say disputed because it's like you're going along a certain train of thought and all of a sudden you hit a detour. It veers around the block and then comes back. You see this in a lot of places in scriptures, and generally it means somebody has added something that wasn't in the original. In this particular case, The psalm is poetic and it's more blatant, but there are four verses that take kind of a left turn on the direction of the psalm. It's going along in a certain way, there's a certain train of thought, and then all of a sudden, and if you read these verses, you will see the tone, the literary style, the language, everything is unlike anything else in the psalm. So most scholars believe this was an added part. It came from somewhere else, perhaps was added from some other missing psalm that was lost when they were making the canon of the Old Testament, which was like 500 years before Jesus' time. So this happened a long time ago. But for whatever reason, most scholars suggest you can omit this part. That doesn't really fit, and that's how I always read it, and that's how I recommend you do it. In fact, if you look at my Bibles, and I have a few of them, you'll see a little box drawn around these four verses, verses 19 to 22, and with a line through it. I suggest you do the same thing in your Bible. When you read the psalm for yourself, you'll see why. And don't worry, I have been underlining Bibles for more than 50 years, and God hasn't gotten mad at me about it yet. In fact, I think Spirit kind of likes it. It makes Spirit think we're paying attention. So I will omit those verses. And what you'll be left with is a beautiful affirmation of what God's omnipresence means. It starts out, "O Lord, you have searched me and known me. You know when I sit down and when I rise up. You discern my thoughts from far away. You search out my path and my lying down. You are acquainted with all my ways. Even before a word is on my tongue, Lord, you know it completely. You hem me in behind and before and lay your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It's too wonderful for me to grasp. It is so high I can't attain it. I can't reach it or grasp it." Those first verses are affirming God's omniscience, that all-knowing aspect of the divine nature. But the way the psalmist expresses it isn't some cold church doctrine or theological statement. No, it's a personal experience the way it's stated. It's a feeling of being connected. What it's saying is, God knows you. Try to take that in. God knows you. Personally. God doesn't know us collectively. God knows you personally. You are on God's mind. Say that to yourself silently. I am on God's mind. God knows me. Knows my going out and my coming in. God is aware of me and what's going on in my life personally, on an intimate level. I may not always be aware of God, but God is always aware of me. And the way it's expressed is not in the sense that God is kind of keeping an eye on me in case I act up. It's not like that at all. God is watching me like a mother watches her children. Like a dad watches his sons play. That's how God watches. God watches over me. And I may not always be aware of it any more than our children are always aware of us watching them. But, you know, I don't think my mom was actually psychic, although I, as a child, I believed it to be true. But she did know when I was getting in trouble or had a problem. And she was always right there. And I think it was because she was just really paying attention. And the psalmist is saying, God is like that. That's what's too wonderful to grasp. God's wonderful love expressed his attention. God is watching us even when we forget about it, even when we're not thinking about God. God is always thinking about us. And God isn't thinking about us from a distance, like I think about my grandchildren down in Florida. I wish I could be with them more. It's not like that. And our prayers are not like those old-fashioned postcards we used to get in vacation spots that say, "Wish you were here." No. God is watching us from up close. That's what the next part of the psalm proclaims. Where can I go from your spirit? Or where can I flee from your presence? If I ascend to heaven, you are there. If I make my bed in Sheol in the afterlife, you are there. If I take the wings of morning and settle at the furthest limits of the sea, even there your hand shall lead me, and your right hand shall hold me fast. If I say, surely the darkness shall cover me, and the night around me, and the day light around me become night rather, even the darkness is not dark to you. The night is as bright as the day, for darkness is as light to you. God is not just aware of us. God is with us. With us like the air we breathe. God is with us in good times and in bad. That's what the psalmist is trying to get across. God is with us always. You know, in good times, sometimes we do feel that, don't we? When we're looking at the Earth's atmosphere transform the sun's light, and we don't think of it that way, in that Mr. Wizard kind of way. We think of it as a beautiful sunset or rainbow. And all seems right with our world. God can seem very near, can seem like a part of our lives. But you know, when there are dark clouds on the horizon, when things don't go the way we hoped or planned they would, in fact, go in a way we feared they might, then in those bad times, in those dark times, we often imagine God has abandoned us. Even say it, God, where are you? Where are you? Right here. And that is when we especially need to remind ourselves of that. You know, you don't need that much help when you're looking at the pretty sunset. God's just kind of done that for you. It's when you're having a problem. It's when you're having a health challenge like I am today.